Everybody, and welcome to the Hebraic Heritage Ministry Yeshiva Discipleship Program. In this session, we are going to be doing a teaching on the 7,000-year plan of the God of Israel. What we're going to learn is that from the creation of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden to the end of the Messianic era is 7,000 years of time. And we need to understand the 7,000 years of time in order to understand the language and the terminology that the prophets of Israel use when they are speaking about the end of days. Because they use the term the day of Yahweh, or the day of the Lord. And that term has to be understood in the context of understanding the 7,000-year plan of the God of Israel. Because each day in creation represents 1,000 years of time, the seventh day of creation, that is the Sabbath, foreshadows the last 1,000 years of the 7,000 years of time, which the prophets use the day of Yahweh. We also need to understand another very important and significant biblical principle, and that is the God of Israel has already told us about the end of days in the beginning of time. We can see this principle from Isaiah chapter 46, verses 9 through 11, as it is written. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. Declaring the end, that is the end of days, from the beginning. This word beginning in Hebrew is reshit, from which we get the term for the book of Genesis, bereshit, which means in the beginning. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times he has declared the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel will stand. What is his counsel? That he is able to declare the end from the beginning, and I will do all my pleasure, that which he has declared from the beginning. I have spoken it when? In the beginning. I will also bring it to pass. When? In the end of days. I have purposed it. He's planned it. It's why he created the world. I will also do it. We can see this principle as well in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9, as it is written. The thing that has been, that is history, is that which shall be, that is future or prophecy. And that which is done, the things that are happening in our world today, is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 15, it is written, that which has been, that is history, is now. And that which is to be, that is future, has already been. And God requires that which is past. In order to understand how it is so that the God of Israel declared the end from the beginning, we can learn of this principle and its application by applying the 7 days of creation, which represents each day 1,000 years of time. In Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, it is written, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. This is quoted in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, as it is written, but beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with Yahweh as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. In his commentary on the Torah to the book of Genesis, Moses Nachmanides, or the Ramban, on page 61 comments about this verse in Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, linking it and relating it to the 7 days of creation by saying the following. The 6 days of creation represent all the days of the world. That is, its existence will be 6,000 years of time. For this reason, the rabbis have said, quoting Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, the day of the Holy One, blessed be He, is 1,000 years of time. Regarding the sixth day, Moses Nachmanides writes in the commentary on the Torah to the book of Genesis on page 63, God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after its kind, cattle and creeping thing, and the beast of the earth after its kind. All of this is an indication of the 6,000-year period in the beginning in which the beast, symbolizing the kingdoms that would rule in the earth, who would not know and acknowledge the God of Israel. And then ultimately, the Redeemer, the Messiah, will come, as it is said concerning Him, and His throne is as the sun before Me. This is the Son of David, who was formed in the image of God, as it is written, and behold, there came with the clouds of heaven one like unto a son of man, and He came even to the Ancient of Days, and He was brought near before Him. And there was given Him dominion and glory and a kingdom. The seventh day, which is the Sabbath, alludes to the world to come, which will be wholly a Sabbath and will bring rest for life everlasting. We can also see this principle that one day is likened unto 1,000 years, and that there are 6 days to the present world and then 1,000 years to the Messianic era. And the extra biblical book of Barnabas, and you can find this extra biblical book in the lost books of the Bible. In Barnabas chapter 13, verses 3 through 6, it is written, and even in the beginning of the creation, He makes mention of the Sabbath. And God made in 6 days the works of His hands, and He finished them on the seventh day, and He rested the seventh day and sanctified it. Consider, my children, what this signifies. He finished them in 6 days. The meaning of it is this, that in 6,000 years, the Lord God will bring all things to an end. For with Him, one day is as 1,000 years. Quoting and referring to Psalm chapter 90, verse 4. As He Himself testifies, saying, behold, this day shall be 1,000 years. Therefore, children, in 6 days, that is, 6,000 years, shall all things be accomplished. And what is it that He says, and He rested on the seventh day? He means this, that when His Son, that is, the Messiah, will come and abolish the season of the wicked one and judge the ungodly and shall change the sun and the moon and the stars, then He shall gloriously rest in that seventh day. In the Talmud, in Sanhedrin 97a, Rabbi Katina said, 6,000 years shall the world exist, and 1,000, that is the seventh, it shall be desolate, as it is written, and Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day. Quoting from Isaiah chapter 2 in verse 11. Furthermore, in Sanhedrin 97a, it is written, the Tana Debi Eliyahu teaches, the world is to exist 6,000 years. In the first 2,000, there was desolation. 2,000 years, the Torah flourished, and the next 2,000 years is the Messianic era. Looking at this in chart form, we have the traditional understanding of how the God of Israel laid out time. The first 2,000 years is known as Tohu, or desolation. The next 2,000 years as Torah. The next 2,000 years is the days of the Messiah, because it's a Jewish understanding that the Messiah should have, and we know he did, come after 4,000 years of time. And so, therefore, that would usher in the days of the Messiah. And then the last 1,000 years is known as the Atid Lavo, or the future coming. We refer to it as the Messianic era. What then is the current biblical year that we are in from the creation of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden? I'm going to read to you from the book The Gates of the Seasons, The Guide to the Jewish Year, by the Central Conference of American Rabbis, which is a Reform Jewish entity. On page 9 of the book is this explanation. The Jewish tradition of counting years since the creation of the world has its roots in early Talmudic times, but it was not adopted authoritatively until several centuries later. In biblical times, dates were referred to as being 2 years before the earthquake, or the year of the death of King Uzziah, etc. In Talmudic times, we find instances of dating from the creation of the world, but this was adopted as the Jewish method only much later as a response to Christian dating. It was in the 8th century that Christians began to date their documents generally as A.D., or the Latin is Anno Domini, or the year of our Lord. And so it is hardly a coincidence that in the same time, that is in the 8th and 9th centuries, we find more and more Jewish documents dated, quote-unquote, since the creation of the world, sometimes referred to as A.M. or Anno Mundi, the year of the world. To Jews, obviously, calculating dates based upon Christian theological principles was not acceptable to Jews. Nevertheless, it was not until the 12th century that dating, quote-unquote, since the creation of the world, was accepted by Jews universally. Only a minority of Jews today, that would be Orthodox Jews, would take the traditional Jewish date as being literally since the creation of the world. So therefore, in traditional Jewish dating, we are in the year right now of 57 something or other. And so therefore, we are several hundred years from 6,000 years. However, there are other sources that indicate that when ultimately this was adopted by the Jewish world of dating time since the creation of the world, there is a book written by George Foote Moore, Judaism in the First Century Christian Era, where he mentions that in going back in calculating the times, that there was a period of the kings in Persian rule wherein they missed counting time. And it's estimated that they missed about 200 to 250 years in going back and doing that. And actually, I believe the amount of time that is mentioned that was missed was 240 years. So therefore, if that is the case, in truth, we are actually real close to the year 6,000 right now, rather than 57, 66, or what is stated as time since the creation of the world by traditional Jewish dating. If we look at Genesis in chapter 1 and verse 1, which in English is, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth," but in Hebrew it's "Breshit bara Elohim et Hashamayim Ve'et Ha'aretz. If we look at this verse in the Hebrew, we will discover that there are six occurrences of the Hebrew letter Aleph in this verse. This verse consists of seven Hebrew words. The first word is Breshit, the second word is Bara, the third word is Elohim, the fourth word is Et, the fifth word is Hashamayim, the sixth word is Va'et, and the seventh word is Haaretz. So therefore, on a deeper level, one might say that these seven Hebrew letters each represent 1,000 years. And the six Alephs represents something contained within the first 7,000 years of time. Well, what is the meaning and the significance of the Hebrew letter, the Aleph itself? In the book, The Wisdom in the Hebrew Alphabet by Rabbi Monk, on page 43, he explains that the Hebrew letter Aleph represents the God of Israel himself. It symbolizes the God of Israel's oneness and mastery. He writes, "The Aleph symbolizes the one and only, the internal, the omnipotent God." The graphic form of the Aleph symbolizes the infinite, eternal nature of the God of Israel. It consists of three parts. Its upper right segment looks and resembles the Hebrew letter Yod. Its lower left segment also looks like and represents a Hebrew letter Yod. And these two letters are connected by the diagonal, which looks like the Hebrew letter Vav. Each Yod has a numerical value of 10, and the Vav has a numerical value of 6, yielding a total of 26. Therefore, writing the Aleph in graphic form, you can say that it resembles two Yods and a Vav, whose numerical value in Hebrew is 26, which is the same numerical value of the Tetragrammaton that is the name of the God of Israel in Hebrew, Yod, He, Vav, He, or Yahweh. Therefore, what we learn from this is that the Hebrew letter Aleph stands for and represents Yahweh, or the God of Israel himself. The Aleph also represents divinity, as is explained by Rabbi Monk in The Wisdom of the Hebrew Alphabet on page 45. And the Aleph represents Elohim, which is also the Hebrew name for the God of Israel, and it describes his attribute of judgment. Now, looking then more closely at these six Alephs in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, understanding that the Aleph itself represents the God of Israel, you will see that the occurrence of the Aleph in the first word of Genesis 1:1, which is Breshit, it is the third letter of the word Breshit. The next word, Bara, the Aleph is also the third letter of this word. Therefore, from this, it is taught by Rabbi Daniel Lappin in his cassette teaching series, America's Biblical Blueprint, that the first 2,000 years of time, that would be Tohu, represents when man would be farthest from the God of Israel, representing the Aleph occurring in the third letter of each of these two words the third letter representing something that is farther in the occurrence of these two words. Then, if we look at the next two Hebrew words, that is Elohim and Et, the Aleph is the first letter of Elohim and the first letter of Et. So this would represent 2,000 years of time known as Torah, when man would be closest to the God of Israel. And then the last two occurrences of the Aleph in the Hebrew words Ve'et and Ha'aretz, the Aleph is the second occurrence in both of these words, and it represents the third 2,000 years of time, known as the days of the Messiah, when there would be a conflict in the earth between those who want to serve the God of Israel and those who want to rebel against him. And that's really the conflict that we are fighting in Western civilization. We have the people who believe in the God of Israel, who wants the world to operate according to biblical principles and biblical values, and there is a fight with secular humanist forces who do not want the God of Israel to be a part of society. This is the conflict of the end of days, and it's related to the tribulation period, where we would have the God of Israel redeeming his people from the nations of the world and ending the exile, and the God of Israel performing this act would come against secular humanism and one world government who would seek to oppose it. And that ultimate conflict is what the Great Tribulation, the last 3.5 years, is about. And the God of Israel, through this conflict, is going to show that he is the king of the universe, and he's going to fulfill his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he's going to defeat the secular humanist forces who are likened unto those who built the Tower of Babel. In the Sanhedrin, in the Talmud, 97a and b, it is explained that it's a Jewish expectation that the Messiah will come after 4,000 years of time since the creation of Adam and Eve. It says, the Tani Debi Eliyahu teaches the world is to exist 6,000 years. In the first 2,000 years, there was desolation. 2,000 years, the Torah flourished. In the next 2,000 years is the Messianic era. And the comment to this is the Messiah will come within that period. But through our many iniquities, all these years have been lost. And the commentary in the Talmud says, Messiah should have come at the beginning of the last 2,000 years, but his delay is due to our sins. Well, we understand that Messiah did come at the beginning of those last 2,000 years. He was just not corporately recognized by the Jewish nation, although we are told in the New Testament that the early believers, the first early believers, were Jews, and there were very many of the Jewish people that believed in Yeshua as Messiah in the first century. What is the significance of the Messiah coming after 4,000 years of time, which would place us back in what we call the first century? Well, there has never been a period in time where there was a greater expectancy by the Jewish people for the coming of the Messiah than what there was in the first century. And in an article in the Jewish press, and this newspaper comes out of Brooklyn, New York, it's an Orthodox Jewish weekly newspaper, in an article entitled The Coming of the Messiah, written by Rabbi Shalom Kloss, he explained that there was a high Jewish expectation in the first century for a personal Messiah. He writes, the belief in a personal Messiah reached its highest tension during that period of the first century when Rome sent her despotic procurators to rule over Judea. The yoke was most oppressive and the Jews awaited a leader whom God would send to articulate their latent spirit of rebellion and free them from the Roman tyranny. Now let's look at biblical evidence that there actually is 4,000 years from Adam to Yeshua. We are not going to try to explain it to the precise year. We just want to see that the thought is valid, that we can calculate and come to around 4,000 years from Adam. The way we do this is the following. We are told that from Adam to Seth, there was 130 years. This is found in Genesis chapter 5, verse 3. From Seth to Enos, 105 years. Genesis chapter 5, verse 6. From Enos to Canaan, 90 years. Genesis chapter 5, verse 9. From Canaan to Mahalalel, 70 years. Genesis chapter 5, verse 12. Mahalalel to Jared, 65 years, Genesis chapter 5, verse 15. Jared to Enoch, 162 years, Genesis chapter 5, verse 18. Enoch to Methuselah, 65 years, Genesis chapter 5, verse 21. Methuselah to Lamech, 187 years, Genesis chapter 5, verse 25. Lamech to Noah, 182 years, Genesis chapter 5, verses 28 and 29. Noah to the flood, 600 years, Genesis chapter 7 and verse 6. The flood to Arphaxad, 2 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 10. Arphaxad to Salah, 35 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 12. Salah to Eber, 30 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 14. Eber to Peleg, 34 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 16. Peleg to Reu, 30 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 18. Reu to Serug, 32 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 20. Serug to Nahor, 30 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 22. Nahor to Terah, 29 years, Genesis chapter 11, verse 24. And Terah to Abraham, 70 years, Genesis chapter 11 and verse 26. You add up those years from Adam to Abraham, you have 1,948 years. What's interesting about that duration of time is that in our calendar dating, this is the year that the modern state of Israel was born, in 1948. Next, we continue from Abraham to Isaac, 100 years, Genesis chapter 21, verse 5. Isaac to Jacob, 60 years, Genesis chapter 25, verse 26. And then Jacob from going into Egypt, 130 years, Genesis chapter 47, verse 28. Therefore, from Abraham to Egypt is 290 years. We are told in Genesis chapter 46, verses 8 and 11, the following, that Jacob went to Egypt, Levi, who is Jacob's son, went to Egypt, and Kohath, who is Levi's son, and Jacob's grandson went to Egypt. Therefore, Kohath went to Egypt. And then Moses is the grandson of Kohath. So there wasn't a long period of time from Jacob and his family going into Egypt to Moses and then Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. We're told that Kohath had a son named Amram in Exodus chapter 6, verse 18, and Amram had a son named Moses, Exodus chapter 6, verse 20. We are not told how old Kohath is when he has Amram. We're not told how old Amram is when he has Moses. But we could probably assume that they were in their 20s or possibly in their 30s. But from Moses to the Exodus is 80 years, Exodus chapter 7, verse 7. Therefore, the period of time to the coming out of Egypt was the time from Kohath to Amram to Moses plus 80 years. Then the period of time in the wilderness was 40 years, Numbers chapter 32, verse 13. From the wilderness to the death of Joshua, 30 years. Joshua chapter 14, verse 7. Joshua chapter 24, verse 29. Therefore, from the wilderness to the death of Joshua is 70 years. Then we enter into the period of time of the judges. In the number of years under King, Cushan Rithathaim is 8 years, Judges chapter 3, verse 8. Under Othniel, 40 years, Judges chapter 3, verses 10 to 11. Under King Eglon, 18 years, Judges chapter 3, verse 14. Under Ehud, 80 years, Judges chapter 3, verse 15 and verse 30. Under King Jabin, 20 years, Judges chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Under Deborah, 40 years, Judges chapter 4, verse 4, Judges chapter 5, verse 31. Under the Midianites, 7 years, Judges chapter 6, verse 1. Under Gideon, 40 years, Judges chapter 6, verse 7, Judges chapter 8, verse 28. Under Abimelech, 3 years, Judges chapter 8, verse 32, Judges chapter 9, verse 22. Under Tola, 23 years, Judges chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Under Yair, 22 years, Judges chapter 10, verse 3. Under the Ammonites, 18 years, Judges chapter 10, verses 5 through 8. Under Jephthah, 6 years, Judges chapter 12, verse 7. Under Ibzan, 7 years, Judges chapter 12, verses 8 and 9. Under Elon, 10 years, Judges chapter 12, verse 11. Under Abdon, 8 years, Judges chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Under the Philistines, 40 years, Judges chapter 13, verse 1. Under Samson, 20 years, Judges chapter 16, verses 30 and 31. And then under Eli and Samuel, 40 years, 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 15 and verse 18. Therefore, from the beginning of the Judges to Samuel, we count up the years as 450 years. And that time frame is also mentioned in Acts chapter 13 and verse 20. Then, from the time of the Judges, we then count looking at the kings of Judah. So we have under King Saul, 40 years, Acts chapter 13, verse 21. Under King David, 40 years, 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verses 26 and 27. Under King Solomon, 40 years, 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 42 and 43. Under King Rehoboam, 17 years, 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 21. Under King Abijam, 3 years, 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. Under King Asa, 41 years, 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 8 through 10. Under King Jehoshaphat, 25 years, 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 41 and 42. Under King Jehoram, 8 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 5. Under King Ahaziah, 1 year, 2 Chronicles chapter 22, verses 1 and 2. Under Queen Athaliah, 6 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 12. Then King Joash, 40 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 1. Under King Amaziah, 29 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verse 1. Under King Uzziah, 52 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 26, verse 3. Under King Jotham, 16 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 27, verse 1. Under King Ahaz, 16 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 1. Under King Hezekiah, 29 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 1. Under King Manasseh, 55 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verse 1. Under King Amon, 2 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verse 21. Under King Josiah, 31 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 34, verse 1. Under King Jehoahaz, 3 months, 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 2. Under King Jehoiakim, 11 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verses 3 through 7. Under King Jehoiakim, 3 months, 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 9. Under King Zedekiah, 11 years, 2 Chronicles chapter 36, in verse 11. You add up all those years, you have 513 years. Then we have the Babylonian captivity, which history tells us took place in 586. Now, if we add up these years, we have the summary as follows. Adam to Abraham, 1948 years. Abraham to Egypt, 290 years. We do not have the time from Kohat to Amram, and then Amram to Moses. But let's say we arbitrarily chose 63, which means Kohat would have been about 30 years when he had Amram, and Amram about 30 years when he had Moses. Then Moses to the Exodus is 80 years. Exodus to the death of Joshua, 70 years. Judges to Samuel, 450 years. Under the kings of Judah, 513 years. The Babylonian captivity, 586. You add up all those years, you come to 4,000 years. So the point of this exercise is not to try to be exact to the 4,000 years. We're trying to see, is it credible that there was around 4,000 years? So within a few years, possibly, the answer is yes. There is credible evidence that there has been 4,000 years from the creation of Adam to Yeshua. We've been basically 2,000 years from Yeshua to now, so we are coming at the end of 6,000 years. That is why we're seeing the events that are taking place in the world. That's why we're seeing Israel negotiating a Palestinian state. That is why we're seeing possibly the fall of Western civilization in the United States of America. That's why we're seeing the rise of China and Russia as powers in the world, is because we're coming to the end of 6,000 years, wherein we're going to have a fall of Gentile rule in the earth, and it's going to coincide with when the God of Israel ends the exile of his people and gathers them back to the land. This will be during the tribulation. The tribulation is the transition time of the end of Gentile rule and reign in the world, and having preeminent dominance in the world, ruling over Israel in exile. The tribulation is the transition to the conclusion of Gentile rule and the redemption of the exiles of Israel, and Israel ruling and reigning with Messiah as the head. Now, if we allocate each of the Hebrew words in Genesis chapter 1 verse 1, which is seven Hebrew words, that if each word represents 1,000 years of time, and in Hebrew it is Breshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz, in English, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, that we have the fourth Hebrew word is et. So therefore et would represent 4,000 years of time. Well, et signifies in the Hebrew what the direct object is in the verse. However, it also has a deeper spiritual meaning, that the Aleph and Tav refer to the Messiah himself. Let's see how this is so. Yeshua is referred to as the Aleph and the Tav. Revelation chapter 1 verse 5, it's speaking about Yeshua. It says, "And from Yeshua HaMashiach, who is the faithful witness and the first begotten of the dead and the prince of the kings of the earth, unto him that loved us and washed us from our own sins in his own blood." Revelation chapter 1 verse 8, because we have the English translation from the Greek, it says, "I am the Alpha and the Omega," which would be rendered in the Hebrew, "I am the Aleph and the Tav, the beginning and the ending, says Yahweh, which is, which was, which is to come, the Almighty." So Yeshua is the Almighty. That would be El Shaddai in Hebrew. Yeshua is El Shaddai. It was El Shaddai who appeared to Abraham. And then it says, the one that is the Alpha and the Omega, or the Aleph and the Tav, is Yahweh, which is, which was, which is to come, which is the definition of Yahweh. It means to be eternally existent. So Yeshua is El Shaddai, Yeshua is Yahweh, Yeshua is Aleph and Tav. From the Wisdom in the Hebrew Alphabet by Rabbi Monk on page 214, he explains the meaning of the Hebrew letter Tav, in that it represents and stands for truth. The Hebrew letter Tav stands for the Hebrew word Emet, which means truth. And this is mentioned in the Talmud in Shabbat 104a. In the Wisdom of the Hebrew Alphabet by Rabbi Monk on pages 215 and 216, he goes on to explain regarding the Tav that the Tav represents truth, and truth is eternal. However, when even the smallest numerical unit of emet, the Hebrew word for truth, which is aleph, mem, and tav, that is, if you take the aleph and omit it, what you have left is met. And met in Hebrew means death. So if you remove the aleph from emet, you have death. The aleph represents God. If you take God out of anything, you have death. If you take truth out of anything, you have death. Because the wages of sin is death, and sin is the transgression of the law. Therefore, in the Talmud, in Shabbos 55a, the seal of the Holy One, blessed is He, is truth. And we are also told that Yahweh is absolute truth. Understanding that the Tav represents truth, the Aleph represents the God of Israel Himself, Aleph Tav specifies them, the God of Israel is truth. The Tav also represents divine protection. The Tav also represents divine perfection. The only truth is the Torah, as is explained in the Wisdom of the Hebrew Alphabet by Rabbi Monk on pages 218 and 219. Torah and truth are identical, as is emphasized by the prophet Malachi, who called it the Torah of truth, Malachi chapter 2 and verse 6. The Tav also symbolizes divine perfection, as expressed by King David in Psalm chapter 18, verse 31. God whose way is perfect. Seeing that the Tav represents truth, in John chapter 14, verse 6, Yeshua said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes in the Father but by me." Psalm 119, verse 151, it is written, "You are near, O Yahweh, and all your commandments are truth." And Yeshua said in John chapter 14, verse 15, "If you love me, keep my commandments." So the Torah is truth, and Yeshua is truth, so Yeshua is the living Torah. Yeshua is personified by the Aleph because he is Yahweh, and the Tav, which represents truth. So the Tav represents divine perfection. Another way of expressing divine perfection is without sin. Yeshua is the truth. And if he's represented by the Tav, then we can see then how Yeshua is without sin. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21, "For he has made him," that is Yeshua, "to be made sin for us," when he died on the tree, "who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of Elohim in him." 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 and 22, "For even hereunto were you called, because Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth." Now let's look in the Bible of prophetic allusions or foreshadowing of 6,000 years of time and what would take place after 6,000 years of time. Genesis chapter 7, verses 11 and 12, we're told the following, as it is written, "In the 600th year of Noah's life," in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. So when did the flood come upon the earth? In the 600th year of Noah's life. This is going to foreshadow that after 6,000 years of time, there would be judgment upon the earth, because Yeshua said, as the days of Noah, so shall the coming of the Son of Man. Slaves worked for 6 years, and then they were able to go free the seventh year. Exodus chapter 21, verse 2. If you buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. You see, at the end of 6,000 years, when we have the end of the exile of the house of Jacob, then the house of Jacob are free. They will no longer be exiled into the nations of the world once they are gathered by the Messiah during the tribulation period. In 2 Kings chapter 11, verses 2 and 3 and verse 21, we're told that King Joash was hidden for 6 years, but he was revealed when he was 7. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, the sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons which were slain, and they hid him. And he was with her hid in the house of Yahweh 6 years. And Athaliah did reign over the land. 7 years old was Joash when he began to reign. This is a picture of Yeshua, who is hidden until he is revealed in his day, which is called the day of Yahweh. Yeshua is Yahweh. He's revealed in his day. And what are we told is the setting of the book of Revelation? Revelation in chapter 1 and verse 1 says, the revelation of Yeshua HaMashiach. But when is he revealed? Revelation chapter 1 verse 10. I was in the Spirit on Yahweh's day. He gets revealed in Yahweh's day, or the day of Yahweh. And he's hid until that time from the world recognizing fully that he is the Messiah, and his people acknowledging and recognizing that he is the Messiah. We are told in 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verses 17 and 18, that there were 6 steps to Solomon's throne. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. And there were 6 steps to the throne, with a footstool of gold, which were fastened to the throne, and stays on each side of the sitting place, and 2 lions standing by the stays. So we have 6 steps, and then after 6 steps was the throne itself. This is a picture that after 6,000 years of time, that Messiah will set up his kingdom and he will rule in the earth. Now let's look at the birth of Jacob, which took place after 60 years. In other words, Isaac, we are told, is 60 years old when Jacob is born. Genesis chapter 25, verses 20 and 21 and verse 26. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife. And Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. This is speaking of Jacob. And his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bare them. And so, Isaac, being 60 when Jacob is born, Isaac is a prophetic foreshadowing of the birth of Zion in the end of days. We are told in Psalm 126 that the redemption of Zion is likened unto laughter. And the word laughter there is Yitzhak or Isaac. Psalm 126 verses 1 and 2. When Yahweh turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter or Yitzhak. And so, when does Zion get born? After 6,000 years of time. It is a tribulation event, we are told in the book of Isaiah. And with the birth of Zion after 6,000 years, we have the birth pangs of Zion. And this is why Isaac entreated Yahweh, and there was an inquiry regarding Rebekah's pregnancy, because we're told in the scripture that the children struggled within themselves, and in them wrestling amongst themselves, and the birth is a prophetic foreshadowing of the tribulation of the birth, ultimately, of Zion, wherein, during that time, the exiles of Israel will return back to the land. And notice, it was in the birth of Jacob that he took hold of Esau's heel. The heel represents the end of days. And so Jacob would get the victory at the heel, at the end of days, when Zion is born, Isaac being 60 years old. Now let's look at the children of Jacob, whom he had through Leah. The first son was named Reuben, Genesis chapter 29, verse 32, and Reuben means see a son. The second child was named Simeon, Genesis chapter 29, verse 33, which means hearing. The third son was named Levi, Genesis chapter 29, verse 34, which means join. The fourth son was named Judah, Genesis 29, verse 35, which means praise. The fifth son was named Issachar, Genesis chapter 30, verse 18, which means wages. And the sixth son was named Zebulun, Genesis chapter 30, verses 19 and 20, which means dwell. But the seventh was a daughter, and her name was Dinah, Genesis chapter 30, verse 21, which means judge. Let's look at the names of these children. See a son and hear him. You will be joined to him, and he will give you praise. Judah is the fourth son. Yeshua came from the tribe of Judah, and he came after 4,000 years of time. And then we have wages. And so we can look at this, that Yeshua had to pay the price when he died on the tree to forgive the sins of the nation of Israel. But also we have the nation of Israel itself being exiled into worldwide captivity, their wages. And then after 6,000 years of time, the nation of Israel will rule and reign and dwell with the Messiah, and Messiah will judge with Israel redeemed, who is likened unto a daughter. He will rule and reign with Israel redeemed and judge over the nations once Messiah sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives and sets up his kingdom. Now let's look and see, given this principle that the end is communicated in the beginning, let's look at Genesis chapter 1 and the beginning of Genesis chapter 2 and see how we're told that the creation took place over 7 days. But the seventh day of creation, it is said, Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work which he had made. So because we're told the end from the beginning, there are 7 days, we're told, of creation. Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, we already viewed that each day in creation represents 1,000 years of time. And the seventh day of creation, which is the Sabbath, foreshadows and personifies the last 1,000 years of time of this world, which we call the Messianic era. That is when Messiah is going to be revealed and rule in all the earth. It's his day. That's why it's called the day of Yahweh, or the day of the Lord, and Yeshua is Yahweh. The seventh day Sabbath of creation foreshadows the last 1,000 years of time, or the Messianic era. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 quotes Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, as it is written, "But beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with Yahweh 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day." Then 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 says, "But the day of Yahweh." Don't be ignorant that one day is with Yahweh 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day, but the day of Yahweh. So if he says, don't be ignorant that one day is with Yahweh 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day, and then he says, but the day of Yahweh, how long is the day of Yahweh? It's 1,000 years. Now we're told how the day of Yahweh will arrive. It will come as a thief in the night. The day of Yahweh comes in the night. What are we going to call the end of days, the night time of the end of days? Remember, each day in creation, we're told, has an evening and a morning. That means the day of Yahweh, or the Messianic era, has an evening and a morning. What's the evening part of the Messianic era, or the day of Yahweh? We commonly call it the tribulation period, which is a time of darkness upon the earth. Therefore, the day of Yahweh comes as a thief in the night. The Sabbath is the seventh day. Exodus chapter 20, verses 9 and 10. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh your Elohim. The seventh day Sabbath is called the day of the Lord, or the day of Yahweh. Isaiah chapter 58, verse 13. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh honorable. So the Sabbath is called my holy day, the Sabbath is called the holy of Yahweh, or the Sabbath is called the day of Yahweh. And it is during the Messianic era that the Messiah is going to rule and reign. It's his day. It's the day of the Messiah. So if that day is called the day of Yahweh, then Yeshua is Yahweh. Let's look at some scriptures that show us that the seventh day Sabbath, or the Messianic era, or the day of Yahweh, begins with darkness or tribulation. Isaiah chapter 13, verses 6 and 8. "How ye, for the day of Yahweh is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. They shall be afraid. Pains and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travails." The day of Yahweh is a time of pains and sorrows. It's a time of destruction. Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. "The great day of Yahweh is near. It is near and hastens greatly. Even the voice of the day of Yahweh, the mighty man, will cry there bitterly." That day, that is the day of Yahweh, is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. It is during the day of Yahweh when we have Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verses 6 and 7. "Ask ye now and see whether a man doth travail with child. Why do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned into paleness? Alas for That day is great. What day? The day of Yahweh. And none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he will be saved, redeemed, or delivered out of it. Or in other words, it's during Jacob's trouble where we have the end of the exile of the house of Jacob. Now let's look at events, significant events, that we are told happen in the day of Yahweh. In Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, where we're told the setting is the day of Yahweh, that it's a day of wrath, of trouble and distress, of desolation, darkness and gloominess, we're told in Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 4, "For Gaza shall be forsaken." Do you realize that in August of 2005, Jews were removed from their homes in the Gaza? If we interpret that event as Gaza being forsaken, but we also know that Scripture has fulfillment in multiple levels, in multiple manners, but if we interpret that that event is the Gaza being forsaken, then that could be an argument to be made that we are in the day of Yahweh or we are in the tribulation now. However, if that actually were true, I myself, the Bible says we need more than one witness. I myself need to have more evidence. I need more witnesses that we actually are in the day of Yahweh for me to come to the conclusion that we are in the tribulation. So therefore, we need to see happen other events that are also designated and said to take place in the day of Yahweh. And let's look at some of those events. And when these events happen together, I'm going to conclude that we are in the tribulation. And one of those significant events is that the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem gets divided. Joel chapter 1 verse 15 tells us that the setting of this book of the Bible is the day of Yahweh. Alas for the day, for the day of Yahweh is at hand, and as destruction from the Almighty shall it come. It's coming as darkness. And in the day of Yahweh, we're told in Joel chapter 3 verse 2, "I will gather all nations and bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat." Jehoshaphat means Yahweh judges. "And I will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted or divided my land." This is an event of the day of Yahweh. And then we're told in Zechariah chapter 14 verse 1, "Behold, the day of Yahweh comes, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee." And in the day of Yahweh, we're told in Zechariah chapter 14 verse 2, that Jerusalem will be divided, as it is written, "I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. The city will be taken, the houses riveled, and the women ravished. And half of the city will go into captivity." Going into captivity is biblical talk for the people of the God of Israel being exiled or being taken from Jerusalem. Half of the city of Jerusalem. And the residue of the people will not be cut off from the city. So we have half of the people of Yahweh remaining in part of the city of Jerusalem. We have another part of the people of Yahweh being taken from the city of Jerusalem. I believe that the dividing of the land and the dividing of Jerusalem is fulfilled in our times in the context of a PLO state, wherein they make East Jerusalem the capital of that state. When we see this event, I believe it's going to signify that we are in the tribulation. But then we'll have confirmation of that still, because what's got to come as a result of that is judgment upon the nations and the fall of the Babylonian system in the world. Zechariah chapter 14 verse 3, "Then shall Yahweh go forth and fight against those nations." When's he got to go and fight? When in the day of Yahweh that Jerusalem is divided, then he will go and fight against the nations as when he fought in the day of battle. The day of battle is a reference to the day when Pharaoh and his army drowned in the Red Sea. He is going to fight like he fought in that day. Then we're told in the next verse, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 4, that his feet will stand upon the Mount of Olives. So the sequence is dividing Jerusalem, which is the dividing of the land, judgment upon the nations, and Messiah setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives. Now, in the day of Yahweh, we can also see that it's associated with the judgment of the nations. Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7 says that the day is great, that is the day of Yahweh, it's the time of Jacob's trouble. So the setting is the day of Yahweh and Jacob's trouble, Jeremiah 30, verse 7. And in the day of Yahweh, in Jacob's trouble, we have the judgment of the nations, as we can see in Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 11. For I am with you, says Yahweh, to save you. Though I make a full end of all nations where I've scattered you, that's the judgment of the nations, yet will I not make a full end of you. But I will correct you in measure, and will not leave you altogether unpunished. Notice he's going to correct Jacob. How is he going to correct Jacob? He's going to correct those that believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, that they need to follow Torah, and they're part of Yahweh's ingathering of the exiles, a task of the Messiah. He's got to correct them to understand this. But then he's going to correct Judah, who identifies with Torah, to understand that Yeshua is the Messiah. He's got to correct them and not leave his people unpunished. It's in the day of Yahweh that we have the fall of Babylon, the land of Babylon, and the Babylonian system. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 1. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see. Isaiah 13, verse 6. The setting of this burden upon Babylon is the day of Yahweh. How ye, for the day of Yahweh is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, shall be as when Elohim overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. So, what nation is there in the end of days that would be a powerful nation in the day of Yahweh that the world would regard as the glory of kingdoms? I believe it is the United States of America. So we see the judgment that would come upon the United States of America. But why would this judgment come according to the biblical viewpoint? For working to create a Palestinian state, for dividing Jerusalem, for kicking Jews out of their homes. And you know what? There is a very significant and important Torah principle known as measure for measure. Or the New Testament, we understand it as what you sow, you reap. So when the United States seeks to kick Jews out of homes, guess what will happen in the United States of America? Americans will be kicked out of their homes. How can this be? It can be through natural disasters. We've seen Hurricane Katrina. Another way that they can be kicked out of their homes is they can't pay for their homes. It's called bankruptcies. And so they're being removed from their homes. And we would see as well the crash of the world financial system, a crash of the dollar. We will see war upon and in America. And even when we divide the land of Israel, there will be division in this country. The land itself will be physically divided. I believe that there will be a major earthquake in the center of the country that will physically divide the nation, but the people themselves who are living will be divided. Will be divided politically. Will be divided regarding how we should react and respond to the issues that are going on in this country. Now, during the day of Yahweh, there is also what the Bible calls the controversy of Zion. Isaiah chapter 34, verse 2. For the indignation of Yahweh is upon all nations. What's his indignation upon the nations? It's his judgment of the nations. But why are the nations being judged? For dividing his land, for dividing Jerusalem. And so we're told in Isaiah 34, verse 8, that the time of the indignation of Yahweh upon all nations is also the day of Yahweh's vengeance upon the nations. He's paying them back. And the reason why he's paying them back, it says in Isaiah 34:8, it's the year of recompenses. Recompenses means payback. He's paying back the nations over the controversy of Zion. And the controversy of Zion is, to whom does the land belong? Does it belong to the Palestinians for a PLO state? Or did the God of Israel declare, when the Almighty, or El Shaddai, who we know and understand is Yeshua the Messiah, he made covenant with Abraham, Galatians chapter 3 and verse 16. Does the Palestinians, are they the owners of the land? Or is Yeshua the Messiah going to stand up and declare to the world that that land was covenanted to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? I believe that's what he's going to do. And that's what the Bible calls the controversy of Zion. Zion will return to the land of Israel during Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 17. For I will restore health unto you. Restoring health is the end of the exile. And I will heal you of your wound. The wound is the exile, says Yahweh, because they called you an outcast. You know, right-wing, radical extremists. Because they called you an outcast, saying, this is Zion. No man seeks after Zion. No man seeks after and stands that the way to bring peace to the area is believing the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. No one says of the world says that we bring peace to the area if we would just follow the Torah of the Messiah. This is Zion, which no man seeks after. However, we're told in Psalm 102, verse 16, that when Yahweh builds up Zion, Yahweh is a reference to Yeshua, when he builds up Zion, he will appear in his glory. When will Yeshua return? When he builds up Zion. But what is building up a Zion? Zion and Jerusalem are synonymous terms. Psalm 147, verse 2, when Yahweh builds up Jerusalem, or when he builds up Zion, he gathers together the outcasts of Israel. The building up of Zion, the building up of Jerusalem, is gathering together the outcasts of Israel. So, when Yeshua, Yahweh, gathers the exiles of Israel, which will be during the tribulation, when the world calls Zion an outcast, when they try to divide the land of Israel and divide Jerusalem, which results in the judgment of the nations, that is when Yeshua Yahweh is going to appear in his glory. We can also see that Israel and Judah will return to the land of Israel during Jacob's trouble, from Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 3 and verses 6 and 7, as it is written. For lo, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, says Yahweh. And I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they will possess it. The subject is Israel and Judah returning to the land. And speaking about Israel and Judah returning to the land, it then says in verse 6 that a man is travailing with child. And then it says in verse 7, that day is great. What day is great? The day that Israel and Judah return to the land, which is in the day of Yahweh, the darkness part of the day of Yahweh. No day is like that. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. Israel and Judah will return to the land during Jacob's trouble, during the darkness part of the day of Yahweh. So let's summarize some of the major events of the day of Yahweh, because this is not a complete list. In the day of Yahweh, the Gaza will be forsaken. The land of Israel will be divided through a PLO state. Gaza being forsaken is Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 4. The land of Israel getting divided by the nations of the world is Joel chapter 3, verse 2. Jerusalem getting divided, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 2, which I believe comes about by East Jerusalem being made the capital of a PLO state. It will result in the judgment of the nations, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 3, Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 11, and the fall of Babylon, Isaiah chapter 13, Isaiah chapter 21, Isaiah chapter 47, Jeremiah chapter 50 and 51, Revelation chapter 18. And all of this is for the purpose of bringing about the end of Gentile rule in the earth, and as well the end of the exile of the house of Jacob. So it's the reunification of the exiles of Israel, Ephraim and Judah, who return to the land of Israel, and through this event the Messiah is glorified. And so in order to have the correct understanding of these events of the end of days, a Hebraic view of Bible prophecy or the end of days, the foundation we need to understand it is the 7,000-year plan of Yahweh. From the time of the creation of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden to the end of the Messianic era is 7,000 years of time. The God of Israel told us the end from the beginning, and so it was in the book of Genesis where he laid out in the creation 7 days, which foreshadows 7,000 years of time, and the seventh day that he rested foreshadows the 1,000-year Messianic era. Each day in creation starts in the evening and ends in the morning. Therefore, the day of Yahweh begins in the evening, that is darkness, that is tribulation, and ends in light in the morning when Messiah rules and reigns on the earth. And that seventh day, the Messianic era, is the day of Yahweh. It's the day that Messiah, Yeshua, is revealed to the world. It's the day that he sets up his kingdom and rules and reigns with the redeemed of Zion. I pray that this message has been a rich blessing to you. Remember always these words from 1 John chapter 2 and verse 6. He who says he abides in him, that is, he who says that he's a believer in Yeshua as the Messiah, ought himself so to walk, even as he walked. And how did Yeshua walk or live his life? He did so by following Torah. He did so by following the commandments and doing the will of his Father. Even so, we should seek and endeavor to live our lives the same way. Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.